Good morning. I'm Glenn Rohr from University of West Florida. I want to tell you a little bit about how in Florida we implemented the Mental and Behavioral Capacity Project. We have done very similar things to the other states in terms of reaching out to five counties that are involved in our project across the panhandle of Florida. We have handled this by checking, first of all, with the federally qualified health centers. The court ordered us sort of to deal with the federally qualified health centers. Partly that is because there's an accelerated Medicaid rate for mental health reimbursement that comes when you work through an FQHC. And so we have made effort to do that, and are involved with and contacted all the FQHCs in our area. We have also done the other two things that the court has ordered us to do. One is to increase services across your area. In Florida, that was not difficult because there weren't very many services across our area outside of public mental health centers, and so that was not difficult. The other was a little more difficult, and we're working on this every day. Jenny's alluded to it. Tim, I'm sure, will as well, and that is to make these services permanent. So many projects come in, and you've all been associated with university grants and so on, where we run in, set up programs, get everybody excited, the grant runs out, and we leave. And so one of the things that the court has really ordered us to do is make this permanent. How we have done that in Florida is we have taken the money and hired, basically there are three groups that can bill for Medicaid services through an FQHC in Florida: psychiatrists, psychologists, and social workers. We have very few psychiatrists or psychologists in Florida. We have two graduate schools of social work, and so we have relied on licensed clinical social workers and registrants, who are the people who finished a master's degree in social work and are working on licensure. And then we've also used students in all of our clinics. So we have basically hired and placed licensed clinical social workers or registrants and students in 20 different settings across our area in Florida. We're working in school systems, we're working in adult clinics, and we're working in pediatric clinics associated with the major FQHC in our area, Escambia County Clinic. And so I want to drill down a little bit today and just demonstrate a little bit of how we did that work within one clinic. And so what we've done is go into the clinics and said, how would you like to have a mental health clinician on your staff? And I think the record is 10 seconds with one physician who, when she heard what we were doing, said, we'll take one. So we have done a little bit. Jenny is working on systems issues for us. We have sort of planted them in the house and let those systems develop around them. I'm not sure either. I think we're going to end up at that place at some point, but we tried to do it from inside. And so we have gone into centers now. We have demonstrated that you can utilize mental health workers in the clinics, that you can go in the examining rooms, that you can work with people directly. We've demonstrated the need. At PanCare in Panama City, we have been there long enough now that we've demonstrated the need, taught them how to bill Medicaid for services, and they now have a licensed clinical social worker on their staff where there was no one in that clinic before. We're doing that in a number of other areas across the clinics across the area. So we think that method will work, and we're on the verge of about four permanent jobs where there were none, and we're moving forward with that in other areas. All right, let's look at which button. One of the areas that we found most interesting related to this is working with kids. The Escambia County Clinic has two pediatric practices that they have incorporated into that clinic, and so we have an opportunity to go into a pediatric practice and work directly with children. We're also doing children in public schools, and we're working on that becoming permanent as well, but clearly in the FQHCs, this is going to be able to be made permanent. There's an estimated 15 million children in the country that can be diagnosed with mental health disorders, and a significant number are at risk beyond that 15 million. Of those children then who are at risk, less than 10% are actually receiving appropriate mental health services for the kinds of problems and issues that they present. 75% of the kids who are diagnosed with any kind of mental health issues are seen in primary care clinics. That's an important issue because this is where the kids are and this is where the problems are. Pediatricians see kids for shots, for physicals, for getting ready to go to school. They see lots more kids than just about anybody else. And so 75% of the kids who have any of these difficulties are presented in pediatric clinics. Many of the mental and physical disorders that we see in the pediatrician's office have coexisting mental health overtones to them. And so the healthcare visits are often driven by the really underlying anxieties and stress and so on that kids have in their lives. Initially, most people turn to primary care rather than to specialty mental health clinics and so on. So people go to their doctor and they raise questions with the doctors, pediatricians particularly here, who are not trained very well in dealing with some of these issues. But it's a good place to go. The need is there, and we found that it is a very practical place to work. Emotional problems are thought to play a role in lots of physical problems, and there's a long list of these. I give here as an example of asthma. There are a number of others where there's clearly a physical and psychological overtone to issues. Primary clinics, then, are often easier to access for people with those problems. It's a more acceptable way to go for your physical problems. No kid wants to say, I'm going to the mental health place, but they'll perfectly go to the pediatrician's office. And so primary care clinics are very easy access and a very easy place to make this contact. There's also less stigma related to going to your pediatrician than there is if you go to the mental health center. Now, we get slick in our mental health centers, and we give them fancy names like Lake View Center and places like that. Every kid in town knows that's the mental health problem. And so we try to cover it up or play it off, but the reality is that everybody knows. And so if you go to your, it's perfectly acceptable to go to your pediatrician, get your shots, get your physical, and then be able to talk to somebody in the process. So there's less stigma to that. We are also making use diagnostically in the pediatric clinics of terminology that's not as stigmatizing. If you say somebody's psychotic or somebody has major depression, those terms can stick with the child for a long period of time. What we've been able to do in the pediatric clinics is to use adjustment disorder diagnoses, which covers a multitude of sins, but doesn't last throughout your life, because if anybody picks that up and looks at it later in your life, you will see that that's a specific problem that occurred within 3 months, was resolved within 6 months, and sort of, not a big deal. It's not like some major disorder that hangs on for life. So when your Navy recruiter or somebody picks that up later, that's, if they ever pick it up, that's not a really stigmatizing kind of thing. So it's a good way to approach kids, to get them the help they need, and to not stick a label on them and to not cause them grief that will last beyond the time we see them. Okay, now, if we look at primary care and mental health care integration in that pediatric clinic, there's a number of really positive things that comes out of this integration. All of our programs have talked about this. The court was well aware of this and directed us to do this. And so there's a very positive orientation that comes from integrating primary care and mental health care in the same clinic. And there's a number of those things that are on there. I don't need to read to you. But the continuity of care is better in relation to dealing with these. And we can deal with some things, depression, anxiety, mood disorders, and so on. We can decrease stress in kids just by working with them ahead of time. And we can, in the long run, lower rates of psychiatric hospitalization if we get to kids earlier. We have Baker Acted, which is a commitment act in Florida. A number of kids out of both schools and our pediatric clinics, most of that is for wild behavioral kinds of things, hitting teachers, throwing things around classrooms, those kinds of issues. And if we can get to those kids before they get that stressed out And doing those things, we can sometimes prevent hospitalizations that may lead them to coming back with major medications, and they're off on a whole route for their entire life with this. So early intervention and prevention is a very important part of working in primary care, because you get to those things before they come to official attention or the school's attention or the police's attention or whatever. So when we move into the care in the pediatric clinics, we look at a spectrum of care, and we're looking at the potential in that clinic to do some prevention. Before a kid gets into difficulty, before they get kicked out of school, we can do some prevention and some health promotion at the same time. Because sometimes these things go together. Stress leads to other kinds of problems, and so if we can prevent that, we're better off. The other thing we can do by being on the scene in a pediatric clinic is that we can do early intervention, and then finally we can do a treatment regimen if it comes to that. There's a number of a good bit of data related to sort of the age of the child and some of the things that show up. And this is a slide we just added with this. In terms of looking, we see some preschool kids, we see some school-age kids, and then we see some older school-age kids. And this is sort of a roadmap for some of our clinicians to, if they're looking at a preschool kid, these are some of the things that come up pretty often. We're looking at school age. The majority of people in our two pediatric clinics are school age kids, and so we run into learning problems. Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is a big part of that, and behavioral and conduct problems, oppositional defiant disorder, conduct disorder. And then as you move on, other kinds of adult type disorders show up in middle school and high school. Now, what we have done is gone into one of the specialty, or two of the specialty pediatric clinics that are operated by Escambia County Community Clinic, which is a federally qualified health center. And so there's two of these, Dr. Lanza and First Step Pediatrics. So there are two of those centers. At Dr. Lanza's, where we have done the most, and most of this discussion will come about that. We have a licensed clinical social worker there 40 hours a week, a registered clinical social worker 40 hours a week, and two graduate students 20 hours a week. That's 120 hours a week of direct care in that pediatrician's office. And that results in a number of referrals. We see all kinds of problems there. Any problems that kids have, a lot of behavior problems, a lot of anxiety, just mood kinds of things. But the thing that shows up most often, or is the most concern to the pediatrician, is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. The reason for that is that medicine is the issue in ADHD. And those of you who've worked with this know that that's overdiagnosed, and medicine is overprescribed. I've often said that the only person that needs medicine in a third grade class at 11 o'clock in the morning is the teacher rather than the children, and that's probably true in many cases. So what happens is kids come to the pediatrician's office for care for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. So we have worked with Dr. Lanza in that particular clinic and come up with a protocol to help her make the diagnosis of ADHD. ADHD has to be diagnosed in two different settings. And what happens is a mother will come in to the pediatrician's office with a note that says, "My kid needs medicine for ADHD." And the doctor is stuck with that. What do I do with that? Do I respond to that? Do I write prescriptions? Or do I do something else? Until we got there, she had either wrote the prescription or said, "I don't believe it," and didn't write the prescription, and referred oftentimes to the community mental health center, which took 3 weeks for the first appointment and another 3 weeks if they got medicine. So it was 6 weeks from the time that that person came till they actually got any medicine if that was needed. We have been able to help the pediatrician in several ways to deal with this. This is a protocol that we've established within that pediatric clinic. Every contact, the contact is made with the licensed clinical social worker. If the parent contacts the clinic, and they are saying they want ADHD evaluation, then the first appointment is scheduled with the social worker. If they show up, and in the process of being examined and so on, if they show up and during that interview it comes up, then the physician will call the social worker into the room and will start the process during that same first visit to do that evaluation. Is that mine? Okay. He's sneaking time things to us here. We got to move fast. So on the first visit, there's an intake assessment done. The Vanderbilt, some of you may be familiar with, is an assessment instrument for ADHD, and the parent version of that is completed. Either the parent can do it themselves or we help them do that. There's information provided in relation to ADHD, some of the issues, some of the things you can do at home, some of the activities you can participate in that will help you deal with your child's problem. And then they're given the school version of the Vanderbilt to take to the child's school, and then they schedule an appointment as quickly as they can get that done. In the second visit, then the parent returns. We go through all the diagnostic material, the assessment instruments, and then if ADHD appears to be indicated, the clinician will write a treatment plan and will also then refer to the physician to look at the possibility of medication. I have more, but we'll have to quit.